Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't agree.
No, I don't know the last one.
Okay, so remind you, this Friday will be our first exam. We'll do a full review session on Wednesday. What I want to point out today is just the resources that are available to you on Canvas. So things at the top of the page I'm sure you've seen. Once we get past the lectures and lecture notes, towards the bottom. So on Wednesday, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to go through the practice exam. If you want to have a look at it beforehand, that might be a good idea. But anyway, I'm going to explicitly work through that practice exam in class on Wednesday. And the other thing that you may have not noticed, but it's there nonetheless, is that I've been posting solutions to the WebAssign homeworks, and you can look at those. In fact, for problem sets 4 and 5, I posted the solutions last week, even though the homework sets 4 and 5 are not officially due until today. I'll frequently do that because, in fact, if you look at these solutions, they're not going to match the problems that WebAssign gives you exactly, because WebAssign randomizes the numbers. But if you simply want to know how to proceed on a problem, you can look at these solutions and you'll see, well, an analogous problem that's worked out in detail. So have a look at those. I mean, what I hope you, if I can bring one of these up. Let's see if it actually comes up. No. oftentimes Canvas is not so good on wireless. And so, yeah, I may not be able to bring this up. What I wanted to point out is the whole row reduction process is explained. And so you can look through those examples, and if you're ever stuck, it's what to do, what do I do next? You can look at the examples and they will sort of lead the way, so to speak. Okay, so this is not coming up, I'm afraid. So much for my in-class demonstration. All right, let's cancel that. All right. Okay, so the intent of today's lecture is actually not to prepare for the exam. We'll do that on Wednesday, but rather to push forward a little bit with the material that we'll be concentrating on after the exam. So I introduced this notion of subspaces last Friday. I'll reintroduce that, and then I'll give you a bunch of examples and counterexamples. And then we'll come to a new notion called a basis, and I'll try to explain that if I get to it at the very end of lectures. But in fact, there are three things that are going to be really critical once we get past the first exam. Knowing how to work with subspaces, and what will happen is that what bases will allow us to do is coordinatize vectors that live in a subspace. And when I do the examples, I'll show you sort of the problems that that you're going to encounter as soon as you try to talk about, say, a three-dimensional hyperplane embedded inside a 10-dimensional space. The problem is going to be, how do you coordinatize that three-dimensional surface when every object is actually a 10-dimensional vector? So you don't want to use 10 parameters to parameterize a three-dimensional hyperplane. And so bases are the key part that actually allow us to get good coordinates for vectors that live inside a subspace rather than in more or less general position within an n-dimensional space. Okay, so let me get started here. So what I introduced on Friday is this notion of an operation acting on a set, leaving that set, staying within the set under the action of that operation. For example, when we scale and multiply a vector, we create a new vector. So a question would be, if I start off with a vector that lives in some subset of the vector space, Rn, and I scale and multiply it, does it take it outside that set? Well, that can often happen. And on the first examples I gave on Fridays, you look at the points on the unit circle. You know, these points on the unit circle all have the fact that their distance from the origin is always equal to one. So you're looking at points in the plane. But with a special condition, that the distance from the origin has to equal one. So this set is called S1. And by the way, one thing you're gonna note as we proceed further in the course is my use of this set notation is gonna become more and more frequent. Notice how I'm constructing this set. First, I give you a big set that everything sits in. It's basically just all the vectors inside the two-dimensional vector space, ordered lists of two numbers. But when I put this center line inside the set, that's to be read as such that. So I'm looking at two-dimensional vectors such that their length is equal to one, or the sum of the squares of the components is equal to one. All right, so that's a subset, because every vector in it actually sits inside R2. It's a subset of R2. But what's going to happen if I scale or multiply a vector, say this vector, by 2, I get a vector that's twice as long, and I'm no longer lying on this circle. So this simple operation of scale and multiplication has taken me outside the circle. So that's the sort of geometric phenomenon what we're trying to focus on. And not only are we worried about what scalar multiplication does to elements of a set, we also worry about how they behave with respect to vector addition. We want, if you have two vectors that start off inside your subset, we add them together, we want to stay inside that subset. So I can give you another example here. If I start off with these two vectors, they have coordinates 1, 0, and this vector here has coordinates 0, 1. When I add them together, 1, 0 plus 0, 1 is going to equal the vector 1, 1. And here, 1 squared plus 1 squared, the sum of the squares of the components is equal to 2, not equal to 1. So if I start off with these two vectors, I add them together, I get a vector that's about out here. Its length is now the square root of 2 rather than 1. Okay, so in general, when you have a subset of a set of vectors, it's not going to be well behaved with respect to our two fundamental operations. And really, in linear algebra, I've stressed this over and over again, it's compatibility with scalar multiplication and vector addition that really drives everything in linear algebra. So what we did on Friday is we introduced the definition of special subsets that we're going to focus on in this course. They're called subspaces. And as the nomenclature indicates, you can think of them as a little vector space, a sub-vector space sitting inside a larger vector space. And all we require of these guys is that in such a set, if we scale and multiply any vector inside the set, we don't leave the set. And if we add two vectors in the set, we don't leave the set. And it's actually these two conditions that really make a subset behave like a vector space. Not only do they look like vector spaces, but they're also going to behave exactly like vector spaces because they're compatible with our two fundamental vector space operations. All right, so I just went over the unit circle and showed you that when you scale and multiply a point on the circle, you leave the circle. When you add points on the circle, you leave the circle. And so the unit circle, this subset of the set of two-dimensional vectors, is not a subspace. And here's another set that I went over on Friday. If I take elements in a two-dimensional vector space where I restrict the components here to be integers, then in fact, that set, it's easy to see, is closed under vector addition. Because if I take any two vectors that live inside this set, well, the components have to be integers. So I'll just write n1 and n2 and m1 and m2. And the requirement is that those components are integers. So minus 1, 1, 2, 3, any of the usual whole numbers and their negatives. When I add two vectors together, then I'm adding an integer to an integer. I'm going to get an integer. Similarly for the second component. And so adding two vectors of these types produces another vector where the components are still integers. And so it is closed under vector addition. But this set is not closed under scalar multiplication because the rule for scalar multiplication is you can multiply by any real number and stay inside the set. So if I happen to choose an irrational number, like the square root of 2, and I take a vector that lives inside the set, here, notice that I have integer components, so I live inside that set. But once I multiply by the square root of 2, I get a vector whose component is first component is no longer an integer. So it takes me outside that set. So in fact, it's easy to destroy. You know, you can set up sets that maybe you think have a good possibility of being a subspace, because at least this one is closed under vector addition, but it's easily seen to not be closed under scalar multiplication. And so it fails to be a subspace. And from our point of view, what we'll be stressing later on, if it's not a subspace, we're not interested in it for the most part. All right, so let me give you a third example. I talked a little bit about this on Friday. let's look, consider a hyperplane. Now, the nice thing about hyperplanes is they at least look like vector spaces, right? If I draw a maybe a three-dimensional picture, you'll have to use your imagination because my drawing is not that great. If I have a three-dimensional space, I can put a two-dimensional hyperplane that sort of slices through it. Where if you think of this as an extend the edges off to infinity, you can think of this as a two-dimensional plane embedded in the three-dimensional room we're in. Well, that kind of looks like a little vector space sitting inside a larger vector space, because after all, you could coordinateize this plane and then create vectors. It's like a nice flat planar surface. It's a nice natural vector space. But in fact, in general, hyperplanes, even though they look like vector spaces, sort of intuitive, they turn out not to be subspaces. So they're not really proper closed subsets of a vector space. They just visually look like one. But the key property that we're interested in is how they behave with respect to scalar multiplication and vector addition. So the statement I want to show you next is that if you have a hyperplane, then if it doesn't contain the zero vector, it cannot be a subspace. And that's easy to see. To be a subspace, we have to be closed under scalar multiplication. So whenever I multiply a vector inside this hyperplane, if I multiply by a number, I should stay inside the hyperplane. But if my hypothesis is that this hyperplane somehow avoids the zero vector that's right at the origin, maybe it'd be easier to see with a line. We had here's a two-dimensional space, and here's a one-dimensional line or a one-dimensional hyperplane that passed through it. If this line does not contain the origin, then it cannot possibly be a subspace, because multiplying any vector inside your hyperplane by zero is going to produce a zero vector. But from this picture, you see that this line does not contain the zero vector. So multiplication by zero is going to take every point on this line to a point that doesn't live on the line. And so it takes me outside of that space. And so hyperplanes, in general, they're not going to be subspaces, even though visually they appear to be subspaces. They look like lines, planes, or other very simple geometric objects that you would think of as being a vector space. All right, so before giving more counterexamples, that last example where I had a hyperplane, and if it did not contain the zero vector, I said it could not be a subspace. Well, that's true not only of hyperplanes, but anytime you have a subset of Rn, if the zero vector is not in that set, then it can't possibly be a subspace. So that's usually one quick way of detecting whether a given subset is could possibly be a subspace. If it doesn't contain the zero vector, then throw it out. It's not going to work, because you have to be closed under scalar multiplication, and multiplication by the number zero is always going to take you to the zero vector. So if you start off in a set that doesn't contain the zero vector, multiplication by zero is always going to give you a vector that is the zero vector. And so it would take you outside your set. All right. Now let's, yeah.
So is the zero vector, does that mean that the initial point has to be zero? Or does that mean that S1?
Well, yeah, so this is a little bit of a problem. Let me go back to where we consider span of a second. Well, yeah. What could happen? I mean, if this P0 is a zero vector, yeah, then simply by setting these numbers S1 through XK equal to zero, you can, if this is a zero vector, then by setting these numbers equal to zero, you see that the zero vector is an element of H. On the other hand, you could have an offset here, but and still be able, what then what you'd need is some linear combination of these vectors to cancel this term. And there may be special values of the parameters S1 through SK, such that, well, the individual terms are not equal to zero, their sum is equal to zero. So it's a little bit, this, if P0 is there, and that's the only thing you know, it's not necessarily true that H is not a subspace. But it's a little bit stronger condition, because if this set with P0, W1, and WK, all non-zero vectors, it could still be a subspace as long as it contains the zero vector. And so there would be some choice of the numbers S1 through SK, such that this linear combination actually works out to be zero, and then H would contain the zero vector. On the other hand, for most P0, they're going to be unrelated to these vectors here. And so most of the time, if you have this offset here, it's not going to be a subspace. This caveat that I'm sort of explaining, that these terms could end up canceling this, and so you would get the zero vector, that's a pretty special condition, and it's not going to happen usually. So in short, if the P0 was not appearing there, then you definitely have a subspace. If it does appear here, well, 99% of the time you don't have a subspace, but if there's a special cancellation that occurs, then you could possibly have a subspace. Anyway, one of the things we're going to work out a little bit later is how to choose these vectors appropriately, and so you could make that distinction. As long as these vectors W1 through WK are in somehow independent directions, then in fact, you would be able to actually detect the size, the dimension of this space, and you can detect whether it passes through the origin or not. Okay, so let's see, that's a counterexample. So Huber, all right, so this next set I want to talk about is exactly related to your question. I'm constructing basically a hyperplane, but notice there's no offset any longer. The P0 that in our construction of hyperplane is not occurring here. We have a special name for these kind of subsets. We call them the span of a given list of vectors. The way you create them is you're given a list of K vectors, and then you take every possible linear combination of those vectors you can create by multiplying them by various real numbers and then summing the thing up. And it turns out, well, this is a special case of a hyperplane. It's a special case of a hyperplane where that initial starting point is the zero vector. So, and what I want to show you is that sets of this form, these special hyperplanes, they are always subspaces. And it's really easy to see. I have to show you two things. That if I start off with vectors that live inside the span of a given list of vectors, then it's closed under scalar multiplication and vector addition. So let's look what happens when you do scalar multiplication to an arbitrary vector that lives inside this set. So I'm just grabbing this form here and thinking of it as representing an arbitrary vector. All I have to do is specify particular numbers, S1 through XK, to get a specific example. But this is sort of a generic vector sitting inside that set. When I do scalar multiplication, well, I'll just distribute that multiplication across that vector sum. And now you see what you've got as a result of the scalar multiplication of this vector by any number lambda is a new vector that's basically a bunch of numbers times the vectors W1 through WK. So this guy has the same form as every element in this set. It's a bunch of numbers times the given list of vectors. All right, so lambda V has this, the correct form to live inside this set, And so set F is closed under scalar multiplication. Similarly, if I start off with two vectors that live inside the span of a given list of vectors, each of them has to be a linear combination of the given list, W1 through WK. When I add them together, I can collect terms, the same vectors, and now we've got a sum of two vectors that's sitting inside capital S. It's expressed as a bunch of numbers times the individual vectors, W1 through WK, added up. So V1 plus V2 is a linear combination of W1 through WK. And so it also is an element of S. All right, so the set S is, in this slide, is shown to be closed under vector addition. Adding two vectors gives you a vector of the same type. All right, and so because on the preceding two slides, we've seen that the span of vectors is closed under scalar multiplication, and in the preceding slide, it's also closed under vector addition, that makes the span of a set of vectors always a subspace. And in fact, it's one of the most important ways, fundamental ways in which subspaces arise in linear algebra. When we have some such a common occurrence, we have some nomenclature for this. I think I have a later slide that explains it, but let me point it out now. We think of taking a list of vectors and then taking all possible linear combinations. We think of that as generating a subspace. We often call the vectors W1 through WK the generators of the subspace that's produced by taking all possible linear combinations of those vectors. All right, let me show you another way that subspaces arise. This is another really important example. First I'll start off with the counterexample. We've seen that when you have linear systems, their solution sets, a single linear system, a single equation in n unknowns is always a hyperplane of one less dimension than the number of variables you have. It's embedded in, if you have a list of m variables and you impose a single equation on it, what you get is an m-1 dimensional hyperplane. But more generally, solution sets of linear systems are hyperplanes, or intersections of hyperplanes, first of all, but then intersections of hyperplanes are just hyperplanes of smaller dimension. So the thing about when you look at solution sets of linear systems, you always get hyperplanes, but as I've shown on previous slides, hyperplanes are not always subspaces. They're only subspaces when they contain the zero vector. So what I want to show you is that there's a special kind of linear system that always produces a subspace, but in general, they are not subspaces, they're solution sets. So let's look at this example. Here I have some coefficient matrix A and some column vector B here, and regard those as fixed, and therefore defining this set as a solution set of that equation. As you vary y through m-dimensional space. Well, if I scalar multiply a solution of this equation by lambda, what happens? Well, here I'm checking to see whether or not a times lambda y satisfies the same equation as y. That scalar multiplication can be delayed until after I do the matrix multiplication. But A times Y, by hypothesis, is equal to B. And so I get lambda times B. But if lambda is not equal to 1, and remember, we have to be closed under scalar multiplication by all real numbers, not just special ones. And so if lambda is not equal to 1, then A times lambda Y, it does satisfy an equation, but it's not the same equation that we started off with. And so this set is not closed under scalar multiplication because scalar multiplication takes our solutions to the solutions of a different equation. And nor is it closed under vector addition. Here, let me take a pair of solutions. So I have AY is equal to B, and I'm also going to have AW is equal to B. They both are going to satisfy the equations that define that set capital S. When I check to see if this thing also satisfies this equation, well, I can distribute that matrix multiplication across the vector summons. And what happens is A times Y is going to equal B because it's a solution. AW is also going to equal B because W is supposed to be a solution. And so what we get is that the A applied to the sum of Y and W doesn't equal B. Rather, it equals 2 times B. It satisfies a different equation. So in general, solution sets of linear systems are not going to be subspaces. They're neither closed under scalar multiplication or vector addition. All right, but there's a special family of linear systems which are always subspaces. And here's the distinction we make here. Instead of having an arbitrary column vector B here, I'm putting the zero vector on the right-hand side. If I had a B there, I would just call it a linear system. But the fact that I have zero on the right, or the zero vector on the right-hand side, that's what we call a homogeneous linear system. And I'll show you real quickly that the solution set of equations like this are always closed under scalar multiplication and vector addition. Right? So here I'll do a scalar multiplication of solution of this equation. Well, I can pull that scalar multiplication past the matrix multiplication, and then A times Y satisfies this equation, so it's going to equal the zero vector. Lambda times the zero vector is equal to zero vector. So any scalar multiple of the solution satisfies the same set of equations with the same matrix equation. And similarly, if I have a sum of two solutions of this equation, I add them together and then apply the coefficient matrix A to that, then, well, I can distribute the matrix multiplication. Then because Y is the solution, AY is equal to zero. W is the solution, AW is equal to zero. Zero plus zero is equal to zero. And now I see that I have to start off with two solutions and I add them together, I still have a solution of the same equation. All right, so what that tells us is that the solution set of a usual linear system is not going to be a subspace, but if on the right-hand side we have the zero vector, then it's always going to be a subspace. And in fact, those two, possibilities are decisive. Either if you have any non-zero number here, then it's not going to be a subspace. But if you have a zero there, it will always be a subspace. So you can detect whether or not a solution of a linear system is a subspace or not simply by looking at that right-hand vector, the vector on the right-hand side. All right, so there's a connection between the two examples because we've known that hyperplanes correspond to solutions of linear systems. And so, and what I've shown you, some hyperplanes are subspaces. Those, but they, to be a subspace, they have to contain the zero vector. But usually, a hyperplane is not going to be a subspace. And similarly, I've shown you that when you consider solution sets, well, I guess here's the distinction I made first. In general, a general hyperplane is not going to be a subspace, but if it has this form where P0 doesn't occur, then it's always going to be a subspace. What you don't like here is this offset here. That's what destroys the ability to classify this guy as a subspace. The existence of this guy in a way that can't be canceled by this guy is going to mean that the zero vector does not live inside your hyperplane, and so it can't be a subspace. But similarly, so linear systems correspond to hyperplanes. These guys are are not going to be high subspaces in general, nor are solution sets of linear systems. But there are two special cases. There's a special case of a hyperplane where we don't have this offset, and then it will be a subspace. And there's a special case of homogeneous linear systems where we don't have a non-zero vector here, or we do have the zero vector on the right-hand side. That's always going to be a subspace. So what I'm hoping you're seeing is that, that for hyperplanes, it's this offset that, that causes the problem and makes it a general hyperplane, not a subspace. And then for linear systems, it's this a non-zero vector on the right-hand side that would make it not a not a subspace. But as long as we have the zero vector there, it would be a subspace. So in some sense, hyperplanes, solution sets of general linear systems, they're close to being vector spaces because when you actually plot their solution sets, they look like vector spaces. They're always going to be hyperplanes embedded in a larger dimensional space. But from the geometric point of view, a hyperplane is not going to be a subspace unless it passes through the origin. So only special hyperplanes are going to be subspaces. And similarly, solution sets of these guys are always hyperplanes, but they don't always pass through the origin. However, solution sets of equations like this are always going to contain the origin because one solution of this is simply taking the vector x to be the zero vector. And then you would have any matrix times the zero vector is always going to produce the zero vector. Okay, so these two examples, these two examples are kind of fundamental. It's that we'll have lots of different subspaces that are going to arise in this course, but what you'll find as we proceed after the midterm is that anytime I introduce a subspace, it may be because I want to solve a differential equation. It may be because I'm doing something that doesn't look anything like the context we're working here. When you look at the nuts and bolts of the construction of that subspace, it's usually going to be either a span of a given list of vectors. So I'm taking linear combinations of vectors to get a set. Or it's going to be a solution set of some equations. And when it's a homogeneous set of equations, then I'll get a subspace. If it's not a homogeneous set of equations, I won't get a subspace. So just for the time being, just realize that there's two different standard constructions of a subspace. First one is just take a list of vectors and consider all possible linear combination with no offset. That will always give you a subspace, and this will be one of the principal ways we construct subspaces in the future. But another way that subspaces can arise is as solutions of homogeneous linear systems, where the number on the right-hand side there is zero. By the way, I want to show you something because it's related to what will be on the exam. When you have a linear system like this, you can solve it without even introducing the augmented matrix. In fact, let me show you what goes on in this case. When you write A, you form this augmented matrix corresponding to a homogeneous linear system. So the vector on the right-hand side is the zero vector. Well, whatever it is, in this last column, you're only going to have zeros there. And all your subsequent row operations are not going to change this last column. If I interchange two rows, I just flip two zeros. If I multiply a row by a number, I have a number times zero is equal to zero. Or if I add a multiple of one row to another row, I'm adding zero to zero. So what happens for these homogeneous linear systems is this last column never changes throughout the row reduction. And in fact, when we'll be solving lots of linear systems of this form. And then typically what we do is I'll just ignore that last column and I'll only row reduce the coefficient part because nothing ever happens in this last column. So not only are they homogeneous linear systems always subspaces, in some sense, they're easier to solve than the general case because I don't have to worry about what's going on in that last column of the corresponding augmented matrix. Okay, so let's see. So here's where I'm introducing some nomenclature for dealing with sets of this type. This will be a frequent construction. We'll take a given list of vectors and take all possible linear combinations of them. I guess I should write this out in detail. This is the set that I create by taking, for a given list of vectors, I just take all possible linear combinations of those. That's done by multiplying the vectors by various numbers and then allowing those numerical coefficients to range over the entire real line. All right, so I'll frequently write span, but you should always bear in mind what that means is taking all possible linear combinations of your given list of vectors. We say that this list of vectors, V1 through K, generates the subspace. It generates it via this creation of new vectors by taking linear combinations of the given list. And sometimes we also call the individual vectors, V1 through VK, we call those the generators of the subspace. But one of the things we're going to have to deal with, though, if I create a subspace in this fashion, how do I compare it with other subspaces? And the problem that we're going to find is that you could have different vectors, different choices of V1 through VK that generate the same subspace. But if you just stare at how they were formed, that's not going to be at all obvious. In fact, the phenomenon that's there is that suppose I want to think of the blackboard as my set S, and I start off with two vectors lying in that set S. Well, as long as these are independent directions, I can reach any point in this plane or any point on this subspace S by taking linear combinations of these two vectors. But I'm not restricted to just using, say, V1 and V2 to generate this space. I could also choose maybe W1 and another vector W2 and take all possible linear combinations of these vectors. I still generate the blackboard and so the set S. The problem is going to be is when S is specified as, say, the span of V1 and V2, and you have another set that's the span of a different set of vectors, W1 and W2, how to tell if T is and S are the same? So being able to create subspaces is kind of easy, but our problem is going to be how do we compare subspaces when they were generated in different fashions? Another thing I could have done is I could look at the set S generated by a span of vectors, and I have another subspace that's the solution set of a homogeneous linear system. How do I detect if they're the same? Well, these are all questions that we're going to address after the exam. What I'm doing before the exam is just pointing to the problem that we're going to have to face. All right. So, first observation is even though this is going to be a common construction, it's not going to be a unique construction, even when you have a particular subspace, fixed subspace in mind. So the first problem we're going to address when we study subspaces further is, is how to tell whether two subspaces are different. And even Even better than that is, how do we actually coordinatize the vectors that live inside a subspace? That's kind of a different issue. Let me see if the slide. Well, this slide sort of gets to the point, but let me state it as another problem with understanding subspaces. So actually, the first problem that I just alluded to is that it's hard to tell if two subspaces are equal, because they can be made different ways. And what you'd want to do, if you had two sets up that were the same, you want to show that each element in one set also lives in the other set. But when they, if one set is formed by solving a system of equation and another set is formed by taking a span of a given set of vectors, well, how do you make that comparison? You certainly cannot compare an infinite number of vectors in one set with an infinite number of vectors in the other set. That's too hard to do. And so we'll be looking for alternative means. But another problem that we have is that typically we have, say, the span. So this is a second problem. If, say, you have the span of three vectors, v1, v2, and v3, and say this is a subset of R10. Well, what this set is, of course, it's the set of all possible linear combinations of the three given vectors, t3, v3, t1, t2, and t3, varying over the real line. All right, so here's another sort of conceptual problem that we're going to face. These vectors, I say, are generating a subspace of R10. Well, that means that V1, V2, and V3 are ordered lists of 10 numbers, right? They're elements of the set of all ordered lists of 10 numbers. On the other hand, when you look at how this set was formed, it looks like it's, you only have three parameters needed to specify every point in this set. So in some sense, this thing looks three-dimensional because there's three things we can vary to reach every point. Yet, each one of these vectors is actually a 10-dimensional vector because I'm taking linear combinations of 10-dimensional vectors. So our intuition gets kind of messed up. Am I talking about a three-dimensional object, or I'm talking about a collection of 10-dimensional objects? And in fact, that problem, I'm going to rephrase now, is, given a subspace, how do we find good coordinates for it? And then this makes a little bit more sense. Here we have a set of 10-dimensional vectors, but we only need three parameters to reach one. So it makes better sense to think of T1, T2, and T3 as being good coordinates for the elements of the set. Even though the individual vectors live in a 10-dimensional space, the natural way to coordinatize this set would be to use just three numbers, T1, T2, and T3. So that construction, by which we take a little vector space sitting inside a larger vector space, and we're able to use coordinates of the same dimension as the size of that space, not the individual vectors, but rather the totality of the space that they generate via these linear combinations. That's what we're trying to coordinatize. And the way you do that, here's another example. Here I have three two-dimensional vectors. And what I want to show you on this slide is yet another problem we face. So this vector here's typically how you create a vector. I'll use three different numbers, C1, C2, C3, because I'm taking linear combination of these vectors. If I specify a value for C1, a value for C2, and a value for C3, I get a vector. And it clearly belongs to the span of the given list of vectors because it's just a linear combination of those vectors. But notice that C1, C2, and C3, if I make this choice and I construct the corresponding linear combination, I get the vector, after doing some algebra or arithmetic, I get the vector 2, 0. If I choose another set of coefficients, C1 equals 0, C2 is equal to 0, and C3 is equal to 2, I construct that linear combination, calculate it, I get the same vector. So what happened here? Even though I would like to think of T1, T2, and T3 as being good coordinates for this three-dimensional space of vectors, here we see that those scalar multiples, you can choose different coordinates and end up at the same vector. And so we have a problem with duplicity again. It's that if this entire set is generated from three vectors, the natural way that we might think of coordinatizing the elements in the span is just by grabbing the coefficients in the expansion. But what this example shows you is that, well, that's not good enough, because you can have vectors with two different coordinates corresponding to the same two-dimensional vector. And so what you want for coordinates is a unique map that takes you from values of your coordinates to unique points in your space. That's how you coordinatize. You don't want to have a choice of two different coordinates for the same point. All right, so maybe this is a good place to stop, because I'll introduce the definition that we'll begin discussing in detail after the exam. What we're going to look for when we have a subspace is a set of vectors such that not only can we write every vector inside our subspace as a linear combination of those vectors, but so that these coefficients C1 through CK can actually be good coordinates, we want this to only work for exactly one choice of the coordinates. Then, just by specifying these K numbers, then we get a unique vector that's sitting inside the subspace, and we have successfully coordinatized the subspace. And that's how to construct these guys is going to be our first topic after the exam. Okay, so on Wednesday, we'll do a review session. You might look at the practice exam beforehand, but I will go over it in class. And then, of course, if you have any questions on how to do row reduction and other things, we can discuss that on Wednesday as well.